It's the great Dante Read Through.
It's the great Dante Read Through, where we are reading through all of the comic strip, The Adventures of Nicolai Dante. Co-created by Robbie Morrison and Simon Fraser from the weekly science fiction anthology comic, 2000 AD.
I'm Simon Fraser.
And I'm Edie Nugent, freelance writer and Simon's wife. Join us as we swashbuckle our way through the Russian Empire of the future. Warning, there will be spoilers. We will be talking in depth about these comics, so if you haven't read them yet, listen at your own risk. To join our book club and read along with us, go to shop.2000ad.com to pick up the books in hard copy or digital.
Today we're reading Thieves' World, found in Prague's 1538 to 1544.
Hi, Simon.
Hey, Edie.
Hello, irregulars. Welcome back to the Great Dante Read-Through.
Welcome back.
And today we are finishing part two of Thieves' World.
Thieves' World.
Thieves'
World.
Thieves' World.
It's called Thieves' World. Like in D&D, there's a D&D Thieves' World as well.
Oh, I see. Well, who wrote it? Who drew it? Who lettered it?
It was written by Robert G. Morrison, and the G stands for Gardner, by the way, and Simon A. Fraser, A for Alexander. Gary Caldwell, I'm not aware, having a middle name, and Annie Parkhouse has not divulged that either.
So that's Colors and Letters
colors
by
and
Gary
letters,
and Annie, yes. Respectively.
The Team Supreme.
Team Supreme. So we return to Thieves' World after the Contessa de Winter has just asked Dante to help her in stealing the war chest, the Thieves' collective war chest of all the mafia bosses. And Dante and Elena argue. So the Contessa de Winter asked Dante to help her. And then Dante is later at the bar, at the Kremlin Casino bar, which is like
beside
a different building. He's left now.
Yeah.
He's left the Contessa. Yeah. And Dante and Elena argue at the bar, with Elena giving Dante some side eye, I think, over his liaison with the Contessa.
Mm-hmm.
And Dante gets a dig in on her about her fling with Andreas. Which, like, fair, that guy was toxic as hell. Like, as much as I feel for Elena.
Like, and he feels bad about it.
She's not really in a position to be moralizing on sexual partners.
I'm not very happy about it. Anyway. The whole embarrassing situation is cut brutally short by two missiles.
Two missiles exploding.
Woo-hoo!
The casino.
Yeah.
And Dante and Elena emerge from the ruins and encounter Rudy Steinberg, who calls himself Papa Yeltsin's aide-de-camp. And he's there to get Dante to a meeting with Papa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this guy.
Yes.
I have issues with this portrayal.
Fair enough.
The close-up is fine. Mm-hmm. The close-up you do is fine. But the stance Rudy adopts in the faraway shot is, well,
somewhat mincing.
It fits in well with the negative gay Papa stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that.
Okay.
But any explanations here, Simon, why you drew it that way?
He was supposed to be a gay character. He's at the camp. That's the joke.
So all gay character sidekicks have to be, as you put it, mincing?
No, just this one.
Was it written in the script that it was mincing?
I can't remember.
I'm wondering who to blame, you or Robbie. That's what I'm trying to figure out here.
That. I don't know.
Trying to see who's to blame.
I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would take responsibility if it's my fault. I'm terrible. Yeah. Yes, I agree. It's not appropriate.
It's not appropriate.
Yes. Anyway.
And he's even got the little like hand clutching it.
Yep.
I can't. I really hate this. Okay. So we, but what, the aide-de-camp is telling them, Rudy Steinberg, I love how all these people have like full names. Like all of these people we see like once and never again.
Mm.
And Robbie's giving them like full names and titles. He really goes for it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's here to get Dante to go to a meeting with Papa that has Moscow rules, apparently.
Okay.
I don't know how they're using the term Moscow rules here, because I looked up what Moscow rules are. Actually, do you know what they are?
I do not.
Okay. So the Moscow rules are: assume nothing, never go against your gut, everyone is potentially under opposition control, do not look back, you are never completely alone, go with the flow, blend in, vary your pattern and stay within your cover, lull them into a sense of complacency, do not harass the opposition, Pick the time and place for action and keep your options open.
So who wrote these rules?
This, according to the International Spy Museum.
Spy Museum.
These are Moscow rules for spies.
But were written by whom? Are they MI6? Are they CIA? Or who came up with this?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
This is what I found.
It seems practical.
Anyway. Thought it was interesting. So I don't know which ones referring to
this
here.
This is actually what they're referring to here,
I'm
fascinated to know that there are such things.
Yes. So we cut to Gorky Park in New Moscow, which is lovely this time of year, with the fall leaves dancing on the lake, a giant burnt-out Ferris wheel in the background, and Dante and Papa meet on a footbridge that looks suspiciously like one in Central Park.
No. It isn't. I think I referenced Gorky Park.
Did you actually reference Gorky Park?
Pretty sure I did.
Very nice.
Yeah, don't remember. I like this scene,
the fall scene here you've rendered. Okay, so Dante and Papa meet on a footbridge, and Papa asks Dante for a hug, and Dante's like, I don't want to get stabbed, thank you, and they smoke cigars together.
Fair enough.
Papa feigns offense for not getting a hug, while Dante reminds him that he tried to kill him after the Romanov job.
Yes,
he also explains that his Jenna was almost killed in the attack on the battleship by a mafia strike squad with tattoos that showed they were from a cross-section of the gangs, of the mafia gangs.
Right.
Like, that's who the other naked guys were, I guess, that he
were
lined
they?
Up.
Okay, oh, right.
Because
so
we saw their tattoos, so.
Right. But it was also the strike squad. I think he's talking about the strike squad, actually the people who actually who shot down the ship.
Okay.
Yeah, so they were. We didn't see tattoos on them or anything,
but we were
told that that's what happened.
They were
a conglomeration of gangs. So they were not one gang. It's obviously organized.
Right. So Papa is saying that these are guys who, or Dante is saying these are guys who'd been thrown out of their clans for being useless bastards.
Ha, cop
out. So Dante tells Papa the Tsar demands Raznorka.
Raznorka.
A reckoning.
Yeah. Razborka.
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 Razborka, thank you.
It's pronounced that way. I don't know.
So then we get a really uncomfortable exchange that implies sexual assault.
Right. Again. It's kind of Papa Yeltsin's whole thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I really don't like this.
Right.
And I mean, I've said this before quite recently, but I know this is an underworld guy, and a lot of underworld guys we've met in this story threaten or engage in sexual assault. But when you mix it with the gay stereotypes, it's just like a double whammy for me.
Yes. I mean, this is playing on old British camp stereotypes, which is a thing that were quite normal at that in the 60s, 70s, 80s.
Right. Well, we're in 2007, 2006 right now.
Yes, I know. It's retro, even then.
Yeah. I mean, the early aughts were a terrible time for humor around any marginalized group. It really was regressive and weird.
Comedy racism, folks.
Yes, the ironic racism, hipster stuff. And, you know, I mean, but it's just, and the conversation is also awful. Like, basically, he's talking about, like, putting his hand on Dante's thigh when he's like really young, and Dante saying, I had to do what I needed to do to survive. It's just like, while looking off into the middle distance, like I think one of the things that really bothers me about this is a really heavy scene, and it seems like later it's sort of like played for yucks. Dante's fine, you know, spoilers, you know, he's fine and he's okay, and he's talking with Papa later. Like, I don't know. The whole thing is weird to me. It seems like it's making light of
sexual abuse.
Yeah. And it seems like it's making light of it somehow. I don't know.
Right.
It's weird.
Listen, that's perfectly reasonable.
And I think it also falls into the trope of somehow sexual assault involving men isn't as bad. You know, like a lot of male victims of sexual assault are like afraid to come forward because they think that makes them less of a man. Also that, you know, because men have to perform in a lot of sexual parts of sexual encounters, it's like, well, if you weren't into it, then it wouldn't have worked, kind of a thing.
Right.
Comes up, so, which is, of course, ridiculous, but because there's plenty of sexual assault that can happen, A, when someone's not performing, and B, even if they do, there are involuntary body reactions that happen with certain kinds of things. So,
I mean, listen, we're 20 years on from this to
almost
what we
20
watched.
Years.
Right. So we watched, like, Baby Reindeer the other night, which is. Deals with that subject very, without spoiling it, deals with that subject in a very intense way. So it's like, I think that show would not have existed 20 years ago.
No.
No.
It certainly wouldn't have.
I think the world has shifted.
Yeah.
And this is now no longer
We have.
No longer.
Yeah. No, either. I mean, I think you're right. It's, you know, it is interesting to realize. I mean, I'd said this in a couple episodes ago, how long ago the early aughts were now. We're 20 years from them.
Yep.
Basically, it's 2004, it's 2024. So 2004 was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's only a couple years away from when this was printed. So it's wild to think that it's been that long. Because it kind of feels like yesterday, but it wasn't. And we have come a long way. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a whole adult human being to show for it.
You do. It's true.
So there.
So anyway, Papa promises to hunt down those responsible for the attack on Jenna and torture them to death. And Dante's like, that's not going to satisfy the Tsar.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we know the Tsar loves torture.
He does love it.
He does love it. Papa rightly deduces the kidnapping will be used as a reason for the Tsar to wipe out the thieves' world. Right? And then he accuses... What's that?
Try to. Seems unlikely, but yeah.
He accuses Dante of having aspirations to the throne via Jenna. What? He talks about King Dante, and I'm like, what?
Is that the first time that idea has been suggested?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What? Dante's not looking at the throne. I feel like that's way too much responsibility for him. I feel like if it happened, it would not be because he wanted it. It would not be. Simon's saying nothing.
Very. Listeners, you know what my expression in my face is right now.
Okay, so...
Anyway, I quite like these spaceships, or these atmospheric ships that come out, gunships.
Well, you're jumping ahead.
Sorry.
We're almost there. Okay,
sorry.
Okay.
More of the conversation.
So, Dante tells Papa to get out while the getting is good because he's going to tear apart the thieves' world clan by clan. Papa laughs at him. And they are interrupted by some interesting looking ship's planes. So what do we have here, Simon?
I like them. I don't remember designing them, but they're pretty cool. They're like some sort of gunship piloted with a separate gunner on board. And they seem to be sort of vertical takeoff and landing because they've got...
It's like a sidecar. Yeah. There's like a sidecar where the pilot is.
I love the gunner seems to be totally unprotected.
He's yes, like open and it's just a bubble.
Whereas the pilot's got a bubble around him. But the vents suggest, I'm thinking of like a higher jump jet or something.
Well, they kind of look like bats, the shape of them.
Yeah, I quite like them.
They're cool looking. They sort of appear.
I don't normally like my ship designs that much.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like you do good ship design.
Well, thank you. I try to, but it's not always successful.
Doesn't succeed to where you want it to be.
I don't always get what I want. Anyway, I like these ones. These are good.
Yeah. So they pop out over the tree line, right?
Mm-hmm.
Papa tells Dante that Moscow rules, whatever they are, have changed. And Dante finishes his thought by affirming that this means there are no rules at all.
Right.
And Elena appears in the sky with a rocketeer jetpack.
Yes.
And takes out one of Papa's surprise ships.
Yeah. Elena in the sky with...
Diamonds.
Blasting.
With blasters.
Yes.
So Dante takes out two of the pilots, or the pilot and the gunner. So he takes out a pilot and a gunner on one of the ships. Mm-hmm. With the huntsman, right? While some of the other planes destroy the bridge with energy beams. They sort of are beaming down on the bridge where the two, Yeltsin and Dante are. Mm-hmm. One of the planes whose pilot Dante shot goes careening into the bottom of the supports of the Ferris wheel, crashes into it.
Which I think I designed to look like the Ferris wheel in the Prater Park in Vienna, which I was well aware of at that time because I live not far from there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, I was going to say we have Chekhov's rule of busted up looking Ferris wheels.
Yep.
She's got to come down.
She's coming down.
And down she comes on top of Dante, but Elena zips in on her jetpack and saves him before he gets crushed by Carnival.
Yeah, she's good for that. She's very good. She's a very good sidekick.
So useful.
She's such a good sidekick.
Papa does get crushed, but manages to crawl from the wreckage to find Dante pointing the huntsman at him.
Mm-hmm.
And Dante mocks him with gay jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Dante, you've never looked better.
Yeah.
And then he shoots Papa.
Well, he shoots at the ground. We don't know what he does.
Yes, he shoots. Yeah. Well, you're cutting head because you remember the end. Yeah. But he shoots. When I first read this, he shot Papa. Okay. And especially because it felt like we were setting it up for us to feel okay about Papa's death because of that earlier scene with them talking about the sexual assault while Dante was young. It's like, fuck this guy, you know?
Right.
You're
going to die.
Yeah. But then we cut to a TV report of, is this Maria Iberia, our long standing reporter?
I don't think she's named in this particular case, but it might be.
Kind of looks like her.
Oh.
All right.
Let's say it is.
Let's say it. She's reporting on this chaotic scene. And also, if the word flamboyant is used one more time in this comic to reference a gay male character, I'm going to scream and throw the book out the window. Like, enough.
Oh, don't do that.
Enough.
Okay.
So we cut from this TV report to a roundtable of the thieves' world, with Dante at the head of things, casually smoking a cigar.
As he seems to do a lot these days. A lot of smoking going on right now.
The remaining Mafia clan heads are challenging Dante, who has apparently just appointed himself leader in the wake of his murder of Papa.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
So we have a lovely panel close-up of Dante smoking a cigar here.
Looking very czarish, I have to say.
Yes. Mm. And that was intentional, right?
I couldn't possibly say.
Well, you're the artist, so yes, you can say.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And I'm assuming these are Papa's cigars he's smoking, because we don't see Dante smoking cigars a lot. And he's been smoking a lot
recently, yeah. So I think since he's become a full-time gangster, he's definitely smoking a lot more cigars.
Yeah. Well, and he says there's a war coming, and this time around he's going to be on the winning side.
All right.
Okay. So, I mean, I think the top level read of that is that we're supposed to think he's defected to the Tsar's side, and that that's what the winning mm-hmm. side means. I believe not a word of it. Okay. Some stuff is going down here that we don't know about, and Dante knows about, and we don't know about. So Lulu is not dead.
Right.
This is what I'm feeling.
Okay.
This is my point. Lulu isn't dead. Victor's in reserve. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else Dante planned with Jocasta, but he planned stuff with her off panel mm-hmm. when she gave up that information to him about where, what's his name was, Emmanuel Luther, was. So I think there's some other stuff going on with him and her. And I'm not entirely sure. Dimitri is dead. We've mm-hmm. got things happening behind the scenes. So are we like soon going to start to see this hand that Dante is playing at?
I imagine so.
Because we're trickling it in here
mm-hmm.
and I'm picking it up. I think I'm picking up almost all of it. I may mm-hmm. have missed some things, but.
You picking up what we're throwing down?
I am. Well, and he looks so shifty in this panel. It's a beautiful panel. It's a really, really well done panel, by the way.
Thank you.
Really, really nice. Really nice. Of shifty Dante. Enjoying his cigar. But anyways, we cut to Papa Yeltsin's Moscow residence, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a rather opulent country retreat.
So neoclassical, but looks more like a cinema than a house. But
it does kind of look like a cinema, doesn't it? And Dante is on the chaise longue, all day long.
On the chaise longue.
On the chaise longue.
That's kind of, I had a chaise longue like that at one point.
Oh, you did?
But this one's actually cooler. I wish I could actually make this one if I was a furniture maker. And, you know, I'm not saying I wouldn't try that one day. I would definitely try and make that.
Yeah, it's really cool looking.
It's a great looking chaise.
It's really great looking chaise longue. Wasn't the one that you had end up like out in the main area at the Gowanus Studios?
No, that was the couch. I had a matching bed settee thing.
Oh, okay.
Which was the same fabric, which was kind of red leopard skin.
Yeah, red Sounds leopard.
Very camp in retrospect, and it probably was.
Yeah.
But the chaise longue was maintained. I don't know where that is right now. I think it's with my ex in Italy.
It made its way to Italy?
It went back to it. No, did it go back to Italy? It was never
back
in Italy
home.
In the first...
No, it was in Lyon.
No, it was bought in Vienna, and then it went to France, where it was in storage for a few years, and then it was in the apartment in Lyon, as along with that couch, the matching couch. It was quite stylish looking.
Right.
We thought at the
you
time.
Thought...
In a kind of like mid-90s kind of way.
Hey, yeah. Yeah, there were a lot of different like... fabrics, patterns, weird
yeah.
stuff
I mean,
happening
I remember
in the
at the
90s.
Time looking at it, if we were going to buy it, and going, why don't we get it in zebra skin? That's exactly the thinking at the time. It's like zebra skin, that's going to make sense.
Wait, was it leopard or zebra?
It was leopard. Okay. It was red leopard. Okay. It was sort of red velvet with a leopard pattern
yeah.
in it. Subtle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I remember because I remember the couch
right.
was well, made the, it to Gowanus somehow. Yeah.
So the chaise longue still exists somewhere in the world. I'm not 100% sure where it is. I think it's probably in Italy with my ex's apartment.
Well, there you are. Mm-hmm. So Dante's on the chaise longue. Chatting to a hologram of the Contessa de Winter, mm-hmm. who is letting her hair be a bit less severe.
Right.
It looks good.
She's got an Alice band on.
Yeah, it looks good. A what?
An Alice band.
An Alice band, because
yeah.
like
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, she has that black band over her head.
I wish I actually had one of those.
Yeah, we need to get you one.
Yeah, no,
hold your hair back, because you need a haircut. So I didn't like that shorter cut. I think the suits are much better.
Mm-hmm.
And Contessa talks about how Dante is the king of thieves instead of a fat old queen.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
I'm just going to let those words hang there. Mm-hmm. I suppose flamboyant isn't so bad after all. Anyway, so Dante and the Contessa banter about how he knew all along that she was behind everything, including the attack on Jenna, so that Papa would be displaced. Hmm. And the Contessa then reveals that she's kidnapped Elena, who killed three of Solonkin's men while Dante was swanning around the Thieves' Council with his cigars. For some reason, mm-hmm. Elena was off just killing Solonkin right. assassins.
Okay.
Because she just felt like doing that.
It was a slow day for her.
It's just, this is weird to me. I'm like, why was Elena just off killing Solonkin assassins? Is that ever going to get picked up?
Don't know.
Is that just weird?
Don't know.
All right. So anyway, she did that. So now Solonkin, the lead Solonkin, wants her dead. And if Dante doesn't carry off the heist of the war chest money, for the thieves' money as planned, they will use Elena for target practice.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
I mean, I'm sure she's terrified. Not.
So we cut to the Imperial Palace gym where Jenna is doing some sit-ups. And here comes Arkady trying to ask Jenna out on a date.
Mm-hmm.
And I had your reaction that you had earlier, like, how old is he here? Is he like 20 now? Mm-hmm. I feel like he was 16 when we met him.
Yeah, he might be 20 something.
And that's like a few years ago now. Yeah. So I guess he's like 20. He definitely mm-hmm. looks older the way yes. you're drawing him.
He has acquired a certain gravitas, shall we say.
A little bit.
I'll leave it at that.
Anyway, Jenna is not interested in seeing the new production of Boris Godunov with Arkady. That's his offer to her.
Mm-hmm.
And he petulantly asks if she prefers the company of his brother and throws in a m'lady, just in case we were all wondering if Arkady has taken up the mantle of incel from Daddy Dimitri. He's like, m'lady. Mm-hmm. I wondered if that was on purpose.
Probably.
Yeah. So Arkady has a sad that Jenna turns him down.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gives Jenna a thumb drive of his surveillance of Dante.
Right.
And he claims that this was ordered by the Tsar to see if Dante persisted in his criminal tendencies.
Well, yeah, we know that.
Okay.
I mean, Jenna doesn't know that. I mean, what's...
Okay. So right. I feel like the Tsar is like behind all of this, like setting up Dante with the Contessa and taping it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's a Tsar setup. And I feel like the Tsar could also use the attack on Jenna to further his efforts if he wanted to. But I'm also like conflicted because he doesn't have any other kids now, does he? Like Jenna and Juliana were it. We don't know of any other Tsar kids, right?
They have not been mentioned.
Right. So who are the heirs to the Tsar? Because he wouldn't put Jenna in danger if like her womb is his only genetic legacy for the throne.
I mean, we're assuming that... I'm not 100% sure that the Tsar thinks he's going to die.
Well, but eventually he will die. Oh, you're thinking he's going to find a way to never die.
We're dealing with a very far future situation here.
Interesting.
I'm not sure that the Tsar really cares about passing his legacy on. I think he's just planning not to die. But we'll see.
Interesting. Because, you know, the Romanovs are all about, like, mm-hmm. family, line, whatever.
Right.
I mean, obviously a lot of that is because they were all, like, brutally murdered by Ivan the Oppressor. But that's true for... He murdered the Tsar's family, too. He murdered both families.
Bear in mind how well that's working out for the Romanovs. They're all backstabbing each other.
It's true.
And they're horrible
people.
It's not
working out well
at all.
And
it's like, it's traditionally the case with hierarchical dynasties that the youth tend not to be very respectful to the seniors.
Yeah.
Because really their whole life is waiting for them to die.
Yeah.
And if you can haste that process along a little bit, why wouldn't you?
Yes. Well, what I was thinking was maybe the Tsar was thinking of cloning himself like Lee Pace in Foundation
mm-hmm.
to be like the Tsar for all time.
That would work. I get a lot of that energy from Lee Pace in Foundation.
I don't know if anyone has seen Foundation, but the same genetics has held the monarchy.
Well, the emperor is basically a three-way split. There's a child version of him, there's a middle-aged version of him, and there's an old version of him.
And then they keep making a baby when the young one gets old enough and the old one dies.
Yeah, they bring in
a new baby.
So it's like it's basically the same empire keeps going under the same emperor for thousands of years.
It really takes ancestral family genetic stuff for the purpose of the monarchy like to the next level.
And if you've read Foundation, as I have, and I liked it a lot, it's nothing to do with the book.
Yeah, they didn't have that at all in the book, right? This weird thing.
It's just a way to keep Lee pacing the show.
But I really like it, though. I think it's a really cool sci-fi concept.
I don't hate that idea, but I hate a lot of the other ideas they have.
I know, but I'm just talking about this one. Yeah, I like that little piece. Right, I think that's cool.
I think he's great.
Well,
I
mean, Lee Pace is obviously
he's
great.
He's amazing.
You don't like the cloning to the monarchy thing?
I just didn't really want to see that in Foundation.
I'm just saying it's on its own.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea. It's a clever idea. Yeah, it's like the three-way kingship is good because they're the same guy. And
well, sort of as shorthand for how incestuous monarchy can get.
I mean, it's exactly what it is.
Like, taken to the...
Right. I mean, the ancient Egyptians did breed into the family. Incest was deliberate to maintain bloodlines.
Right.
The Ptolemies were like that and were terribly inbred.
Terribly.
Very terribly inbred.
Oh no.
They were marrying their sisters and their cousins and so forth.
Ailments and such.
There was, I think, mummies have been studied with very serious genetic problems.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, the problem is when you put your destiny and fate in a bloodline, then you're courting problems. And the Tsar is very well aware of that.
Okay.
The Tsar is very well aware of most things.
He is.
Because
he's
a very clever man.
So then we cut to Dante in a lame burglar outfit, though I guess points for having a better mask than the whole gentleman thief, get up.
Right.
And we get a nice voiceover of his thievery that he's committing.
We get to Maxim Petrov.
Maxim Petrov again from Imperial Gangster. Dante was one of the finest thieves of his generation, apparently, and his weapons crest made him a master of cybercrime. And so we see Dante has taken out some guards in a tall office building and is sort of plugging his biomech hand into the computer system, right?
Yeah.
This allegedly means that he's infiltrated mafia security and transferred the billions from the war chest money into the Contessa's secret account.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I feel like in 2674 with inflation, it would be trillions, not billions. I feel like billions is too little.
I don't really know. We may have had a devaluation or a valuation or a replacement of currencies. I mean, that's the thing.
That's
the currencies, they can swap them out.
It fell apart at some point.
We can do that.
So Dante flies away after doing this in the Strike Hawk under the shadow of the Hollow Tsar looming over downtown. I liked that angle that you did there. Mm-hmm. Thought it was nice.
Thank you.
So we cut to the Kerensky bathhouse in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
Dante is instructed by an off-camera voice to throw the huntsman into the pool, and he does so and is surrounded by Salonkin assassin's goons. And Mr. Salonkin himself is there with a blaster trained on Elena.
Hmm.
Okay.
Because that's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Dante notices the Contessa isn't there and that Salonkin is all like, oh, she's a silly woman, so of course she's late. Ha ha ha. And Dante has a good laugh knowing that Salonkin has surely been double-crossed if the Contessa is gone. How many times has it been Dante in that position? So many.
Yeah. I mean, you can safely say the Contessa is up to no good.
Yes.
By default.
Yes. So before Elena can get in too many quips about how Dante's arrival doesn't fill her with confidence for a rescue, the Strike Hawk crashes down through an elaborate atrium glass dome that's overhead of the pool area of this bathhouse. And Dante orders the Strike Hawk to fire via the crest. And so it does, blasting through all of Salonkin's men into a sticky red paste against the walls of the bathhouse.
So we've now established that Dante has another superpower, which is like basically flying his spacecraft as an autonomous drone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's done this a couple times now.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did it with first in Deadlier Than the Male. Right. He had it fly in.
Yep. Yeah.
And now he's doing this again. It's pretty effective. And all this bloody mess, I guess will be easier to clean because it's all tiled, you know, they can just
It's all pitted though. There's like sharp.
Well, this is what I was going to ask is what are the round things amongst the blood behind Salonkin's?
Bullet holes in the ceramic.
Oh, bullet holes. Yeah. Got you.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I didn't quite clock that's what that was.
Probably.
I was confused by that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Salonkin manages to survive. His face is kind of messed up and he's crawling across the ground toward Dante. And he makes a whole speech about how his lightsaber or light blade was forged in the fires of Mount Doom or like whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's going to cut apart Dante's bio blades.
And that does not work out.
No. What happens instead?
Don't know.
You do know.
Do I?
Yes, Dante cuts the bioblade.
Oh, right,
off
that he cuts the bioblade in half.
He cuts
the no,
sorry,
Dante's
not the
bioblade cuts the lightsaber.
Cuts the light blade in half off at the hilt with one stroke.
Yeah, there you go.
And then he tells Salonkin he might have let him live because he knows the Contessa can do things to a man and his sense of reason.
Dante definitely knows that.
Right, but he also knows he had to pull Jenna out of the wreckage of the battleship and she nearly died, so dead he is.
Yep.
And I liked the shadow on the wall showing the killing of Salonkin so we can see what's happening, but we're focused on Elena's face reacting to it. Was that your idea or was that in the script? Do you remember?
Don't know. Probably in the script, but I don't know.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it looks good.
It's nice. It looks good.
Looks good. Yeah.
Thought it was cool framing.
Mm. Yeah. Doesn't make any sense for where the shadow is, but that's not important. Ha ha.
So the pair escape through the new sunroof of the bats.
Indeed.
In the Strike Hawk. And we then cut to the Zarkov spaceport in Moscow. Okay. I really love this city building you did in this narrow top panel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah, it looks good.
What did you base that on anything?
Well, it's kind of inspired by a city I designed for a different project, which never went anywhere.
Oh.
So it was Axel, which is that book I was doing for the French market, which fell apart. So I did a lot of like this kind of space station East or futuristic, like hemispherical structures, like semi-domes and pierced domes, and kind of like almost these kind of arch structures are almost sort of Industrial Revolution Victorian, but kind of done with a kind of modernist twist.
Yeah, well, I thought the internal shot we then get to of the spaceport is really cool as hell as well. There are dinosaurs with backpacks and guns just like hanging out on catwalks that are above the ground floor.
Yeah, well, that's these are the Geckonoids. That's from that project. That's actually, no, God, I didn't even realize, I didn't even see I did that. Yeah, those characters are Geckonoids from Axel.
Really?
Which was never published.
I was going to ask about that. Why we suddenly have like dinosaurs with jetpacks or whatever.
That's the only
time. They're lizards?
Yeah, they're kind of
lizards with backpacks.
Intelligent lizard creatures. Yes, I don't remember much about the script for that project.
You're referencing your own.
I'm referencing my own failed project. Just so you know.
So there you go. And we see our Contessa in a hot ass traveling or flight attendant suit. I don't know if she's trying to be a flight attendant here to blend in or if that's just her cool traveling outfit.
Maybe.
She has a little hat, you know?
A little pillbox hat.
So she's getting away from the scene with her fancy luggage when who stops her but
Papa Yeltsin.
Papa Yeltsin. And he says,
flamboyant gangster.
Yeah. You said, why did you use the word again?
Sorry. I'm just being sarcastic.
He says, you look as if you've seen a ghost to Contessa. And then the next few panels flash back to Gorky Park, and we see that Dante didn't kill Papa, as you intimated.
I should have made that flashback clearer.
So, anyway. I have notes.
You do?
I think the flashback should have been noted here.
Yes, it's
like
not clear.
8 hours earlier at Gorky Park or something, because I didn't know what was going on for a minute.
Exactly. I know. It should have been clear. I should have done some sort of graphical device to make it work better.
Shimmery, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't
know. My bad.
What would you have done to indicate a flashback just visually?
I would maybe done it black and white or change the panel borders, shapes in some way.
Black and white.
Black and white would do it. But yeah, that would
be something. Why is black and white so good for that?
Because we associate it with flashbacks in TV and film.
It's just really been like visual language now.
Visual language for memory.
That's so cool.
I mean, I did it in the, what's it, book Family, I did it with photograph. I did the panel corners with little
photo
corners.
Putting
photographs in a photo album, you get these little paper corners you slot the photograph into. So I did that on them for the flashback.
That's cute. I like that.
A little subtle.
Yeah, that's nice.
It did work because it establishes a different situation, different time frame.
I love that. That's so cool. Dante didn't kill Papa.
He wasted
the ammo into the head of a marionette or something that was a part of the theme park that collapsed there.
The clown thing, yes.
Yes. And he tells Papa that he has a proposition for him. So back in the present, the Contessa takes off running away from Papa at the spaceport and runs into...
Nikolai Dante,
who tells her that all the exits are blocked by Mafia and she won't get away.
Yeah, but she's good at that.
And then she, Contessa, makes a last, like, nonsensical effort to, like, play on Dante's sympathies by claiming that Salonkin was mad with jealousy about her and Dante hooking up and that he reneged on the deal and was going to kill Elena, and she tried to warn him, and but it's thin.
Mm-hmm.
She knows it's desperate, and so does Dante.
Yes.
So she drops the act and decides to appeal to Dante's lust for money
mm-hmm.
instead, and offers to split the war chest with him if he'll help her escape.
Mm-hmm.
And Dante tells her that the Crest seized control of her accounts when he transferred that money.
Hmm.
So when he went in to plug in his biomech, he seized control of her accounts when he went to transfer that into the Contessa's accounts, and he only left the money in there long enough for her to, like, check the account and see it was there,
mm-hmm.
and then he cleaned her out.
Oh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Oof. Hit her where it hurts, Dante.
Yes.
In the wallet. That's...
Yes.
Where we go to hurt the Contessa.
Indeed.
Yes. And so we cut back to Dante and Papa in Gorky Park
smoking cigars.
Yeah, together. Smoking cigars. And that's just a lot of cigar smoking. Earlier, Dante explains that he's going to offer Papa half of the war chest and half of control of the thieves' worlds, split it with Dante, both things. And the Contessa will take the blame for the heist, for the attack on Jenna, mm-hmm. everything.
Right.
And Dante asks her how it feels to be conned, and she answers, exquisite, which I kind of love. And then calls Dante a bastard.
Biggest in the Empire.
As he swans off, yeah. It's a good line.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good line. And he leaves her in the clutches of Papa and his thieves guild.
Hmm.
Right? So we cut back to the Imperial Space Palace, where Dante comes into his bedroom to find Jenna watching Arcady's recording of him banging the Contessa.
Oh, yeah, it is his bedroom, yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he's like, oh, you couldn't wait to see me.
Yeah.
Like, so she's in his room. Jenna says, don't tell me, it was all in the line of duty. Right? Before leaving him alone in his room to think about what he's done.
Did a bad thing.
He did a bad thing.
Naughty boy.
Naughty boy.
Yep.
And so that's the end of Thieves' Worlds.
Yeah.
We leave Dante in a romantic time out.
Yes.
So that's pretty sad for him, because we were ramping up. Long, slow kiss in the rain, remember?
Right.
That yes, we didn't ever want to end.
Yes, and it didn't. It did end. And he's fucked it up again.
Well, yes, he has. So we built that up just to knock it down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're at. So... we've got a lot of threads happening here, though.
Yeah, I'm generally speaking, the Thieves' World, I'm not terribly happy with how it's drawn, but the coloring's coming together. I mean, I'm looking at, I've had a secret sneak forward and had a look at the next book.
He keeps taunting me with that, y'all. He's like, I snuck forward and woo, we got stuff coming.
Yeah, well, I do want to get on with it, but I'm just kind of like curious, and I started reading and I couldn't stop because it was so riveting. I'm looking at the way it's coming together. It's like the coloring, I think, is really, really coming
where you
together
want it
very
to be.
Well. Yeah, this is working very well. My drawing isn't quite up there yet, but it's getting there.
Why do you think it's not up there? What about it isn't up there?
I think we get to a coherence of style between the two of us, me and Gary, by the end of it, that is pretty, pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty happy with. In fact, right.
But what is wrong with your drawing? You're saying the colors here
it's
are pretty on.
It's a little clumsy. The inking's clumsy. I think a lot of it was rushed. I think I was working very fast, and it just looks a little bit like slipshod. And I'm like not wild about that. Just kind of like things like were not done great. I don't love the way I did the Contessa. There's bits and pieces just bug me, and I'm like I did get through that and work it out.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's my inking is very, very dependent on my state of mind.
And
I don't remember how my state of mind was at this point, but certainly my inking is not top notch.
That's interesting. Because I remember you telling me early on when I first met you and we would have hours long conversations on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You would do that while you were inking because you said you could kind of let your mind drift while you were inking.
Right. Yes.
You know,
I mean, that's good. That's actually good in a lot of ways, because if I'm distracted, if I'm doing something else, talking to somebody or watching something and I'm inking, then I can kind of like let it'll kind of flow well.
It comes out like more naturally.
Yeah, I don't get in my own way. If I'm kind of stressed or anxious or working too fast or something and I'm trying to ink and it's not coming out right, it's like, I don't know. It's much more a case with inking with pens on paper, with ink. analog.
Which
this definitely is. I was quite far away from doing everything digitally at this point. And it definitely, I look at my inking and it's like,
It's bugging you.
It bugs me. It always bugs me. But I did, I know that I did move on from this and get, it definitely solved a lot of these problems.
Yeah.
But it's one of these things. It's, you know, I can't really, I'm not very good at powering through something I'm not enjoying very much or I'm not into.
I see.
So I'm not sure if I was too into this or not. I think it was quite good.
It's
a decent enough story.
It's a fine story, aside from all the homophobia.
Yeah, barring the homophobia. But yeah, I think we're getting there.
I mean, it's sort of like, I mean, this is serving at this point in the story to show us where Dante is, because all of his previous interactions with the Contessa have been fun and bouncy and sexy.
Yeah.
And here he is, and he just sort of like angry screws her, you know? And doesn't fall for her blathering at the end.
I mean, I think this is an interesting point where things turn, because I think at this point Dante's moving away from being passive and being proactive in the storyline, which is important.
Yes.
This is definitely where it really starts to happen. And he starts to do things like build a power base, for example, which is
right.
what's happening here.
Thieves' world. And I mean, the whole thing of him taking on the sword of the Tsar is Dante making a move. Like, we know that.
Right.
Are any of us really fooled that he's the Tsar's man now?
Yeah,
we know that isn't true.
We can see there's a bunch of things happening behind the scenes. We just don't know what they
even
are.
Even the Tsar knows that isn't true, though. So I don't understand, like, what kind of chess these people are playing. Because the Tsar is way too smart to think that Dante has just come over to his side. He does not believe that. I guess he just thinks that he's a tool he can control.
Yes.
You know, for reasons.
Well, he thinks he's cleverer than everybody. Bizarre.
He tends to be.
So, yes, he tends
Dante
to win.
Dante also thinks he's cleverer than everybody. Well, I didn't know you were
talking about
there.
No, but Dante has a reputation for fucking up.
That's true.
He's not on the right side. He's frequently on the wrong side. He does stupid things. He fucks up. He fucked up killing his brother. He fucked up, you know, a lot of things.
Doesn't know he fucked up killing his brother yet.
He will work it out. But the thing is that I think the Tsar probably underestimates Dante at this point. And Dante underestimates Dante too, because he's not really in the game quite yet. Mm. But he's definitely making moves to be in the game.
It's sort of like, I feel like he's sort of throwing off the old Dante mantle in this one.
I think so.
So it's like, you know, he's not going to be taken in by like the hot ladies. Mm. You know what I mean? Anymore.
It's a colder, harder Dante.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's sort of done. It seems like he's done with random flings at this point. There's something about it, something about the framing of this story that feels like it's meant to represent that he's sort of done with that playful, you know, sex romp stuff.
Yeah, and it's definitely a pivot point. There's definitely a pivot point happening here.
All right.
This is definitely something we will probably look back on and go,
Yes, this is where it happened. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Also remember, folks, we're going to be at the Lawless Comic Con in Bristol.
We will.
On May 25th and 26th at the Doubletree Hilton. Tickets available at lawlesscomiccon.co.uk. And we are trying to do a live podcast episode there.
We will try.
So please come down and see this folly that we are going to engage in. I think it's going to be on Saturday, the 25th at 1 p.m. on the main floor of the con. So please come and otherwise it'll be just sad. It'll just be like me and Simon standing there talking to like one person.
Or a guest.
I know. Yeah, no, maybe. I mean like in the audience watching. We're going to have like one person.
Yeah.
They're all going to be like online to get
we did it at the bar,
Garth Ennis's autograph or,
yeah, true,
you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, please come and sit with us so that we're not so sad.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. So we are closing the book on Dante for today. Okay, that's the book closing.
I just closed it. That's the end of that volume.
We are slamming the book on Dante for today.
That is the end of volume 6 of The Hachette.
Of The Hachette.
Yeah.
Yeah. Book done.
Yeah. Now we're down to the last two books.
Yeah. We'll be back next time with The Chaperone, Destiny's Child, and maybe The Tsar's Daughter, if we can cram it in.
I don't know if we can.
See.
We'll find out.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If so, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave us ratings and reviews wherever you can. Tell your friends to join our book club and read along with us. Follow us on Instagram at PodTGDR. Find us on Facebook, the Great Dante Read Through community. Let us know what you think of the podcast, of Dante comics, whatever is on your mind. I'm Edie.
And I'm Simon.
And we will catch you next time.
Bye.